Reintroduce ourselves. I'm Andrew Greenberg. I'm on the board of Georgia Normal.
Cara Mikus, litigation specialist.
Jason Mitchell, law enforcement. Here to provide perspective, not representing my agency.
Disclaimer.
But laughing anyway.
Even better than this. So are you second guessing yourself yet?
No, absolutely not.
I saw your face pause. Well, that's...
I understand, I mean, those are contrived... Well, they're not completely contrived, but they're... The actions, of the, particularly in the first encounter, that cop was, I think, kind of over the top. Unless he had some information that wasn't obvious. In the second scenario, that's kind of harder to say whether or not those officers were acting properly. And, you know, there's different ways of approaching this. You know, you can do... I find you can be very effective just by being decent to people. One of the things when I was a rookie that I was told was your attitude makes my attitude. If you come at me with a rough attitude, you're going to get it back. And I try to use that as my approach when I do encounter people to be able to, because I don't want to be the person who's going to start a confrontation. On the other hand, I don't have a problem if there's a confrontation, but it's not, I don't want it to be me that starts it. I understand we have different roles to play. My role is to enforce the law. You know, the people that I'm trying to deal with, I'm trying to focus my attention most on bad guys, their job is to go to jail, and we'll work that out. And generally, if we both understand those roles, we don't have a lot of conflict. I've been doing this 13 years and have had very, very few uses of force. I've had one person thank me for the way that I arrested them in court the next day. How embarrassing is that? But you don't have to be... Sometimes you have to be a jerk, but generally you can avoid it. And that's, I cringe when I see some of these things, particularly in the first encounter. The second encounter, that could go either way based on what the officer knows, because that's one of the things, and he talked about it in the presentation. You don't know what the officer necessarily knows. You could be matching a bolo, and that could be why officers are yelling at you over the PA and have long guns out. And they may be acting very reasonably, but you don't know that. And then in the third scenario, that I don't really have any. taking a 60-plus-year-old woman to jail.
Yeah, but the trouble is...
That never goes over
then
well.
Then we're in Atlanta, and we've got our red dog scandal.
Well, so. That's...
So the cop...
That's a whole
fifth.
Other issue.
We have a question. Right,
we got a lot of questions. Let's jump into them.
This is for the officer, and I just want to... I'm sorry. I respect the law, but still, whenever you're arrested, do you think there's a point where the mentality of the officer might overcome their best training in a situation? Like maybe they pull over someone who they associate in high school was not their best friend, and they decide to act outside of their bounds. Like we can react responsibly towards the officer, be like, oh my God, I just want to be friendly to you and please be easy on me, but then they receive that as weakness and then they decide to persecute us versus them seeing that as a sign of compliance and being like, all right, they let us search your vehicle, we were allowed to ask all the questions we wanted to, and then, because I got pulled over on the way here and I was compliant and he did let me go, but sometimes they will take that, you know, to search a vehicle and see that as a sign of weakness and then persecute people for no good reason.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are always people, there are all kinds of folks in any kind of profession. I'm kind of having a hard way of approaching even the question. Could it be that, I mean, if you want to exert your rights, exert your rights. I mean,
your rights, they might be harder on you because of it.
I don't really see. Okay, how to say this without getting in trouble?
Well, you've got your thoughts. I'll jump in real quick, unless you're ready to go on. You want to?
Sometimes if an officer is pulling you over because he's looking for something, he wants to get a search of the car. A lot of times, officers aren't going to get involved in writing a ticket in reaction to that. But on the other hand, I mean, they're your rights. You exert them, I mean, or not, however you make.
We were pulled over on the way
speeding, which I was out of line. Now, it's over the speed limit. I didn't know what it was. But then they removed me to the back of the vehicle, which is obviously within your rights. Then they started questioning people within the vehicle. It's like, hey, are you smoking pot tonight? Like, why would they question my passengers?
Get your passengers watching this quick.
Yeah.
They gotta. There's no reason for them to talk about anything to a police officer.
So at any point, if that police officer's like, excuse me, can you step out of the vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, obey a cop. If a cop gives you an order, whether it's right or not, you put yourself at risk by not obeying that order. If they're asking you questions, then it's again, I mean, they don't have probable cause at that point. They're looking for that probable cause. If you're afraid of being walked over, never be confrontational. I don't think that works here. I don't think that works in most situations, even whether police are involved or not. But be firm about your rights. The Supreme Court has actually said that you have to positively assert your rights. Being silent does not retain your right to remain silent. You actually have to positively assert your right to remain silent. You have to positively assert your right not to be searched. I do not consent to a search.
But then can they arrest you? Can they say you're...
They can arrest you any day of the week, and I'll start all over again. It's a lot better to be arrested than convicted. If a cop's going to arrest you, they might have anyway. You don't want to force a situation.
24 hours of our life for no good reason.
Better than years, losing your profession, losing an opportunity at having a profession that's licensed, etc.
It sucks, but basically you have to maintain an attitude of, you know what, I understand that you're there and you're there sometimes, with respect to my police friend here, with the intent that they are going to try and intimidate you. But you have to maintain an ability to speak what your rights are. No, I am not consenting to this search right now. No, I, you know, am not going to allow you in my home. Whatever the situation is, to be assertive is not the same thing as being confrontational.
Yeah, and again, you have to positively assert these things. You have to be intelligent about, which is why we show this here. It is very easy for people to get tricked into stuff, get pressured into stuff, and when you're in a police situation, it is very easy to freak under the stress. We laugh at the people running, but a lot of people have a fear reaction, and it'll split for no good reason. We know people who haven't committed crimes who split, and that the Supreme Court gives you almost no rights after you have run in that situation. So, positively assert. Your passengers in your car need to know that too. And in most cases, but as a general rule, if you show yourself to be intelligent, you're also showing yourself not to be a threat. If you're showing yourself informed, you're proving that you're not necessarily the easiest bust of the night. Be intelligent, don't be confrontational, don't give them reason to come after you, and if they've got to then, a cop's going to know if you say, I don't consent to any searches. If he finds something, he's got to prove he had probable cause. Let's find someone who's stupider to bust instead. You don't got to be faster than the bear.
I've got a question. If you have a concealed weapons permit, are you required to declare and surrender that weapon to the officer? Does it mean you're armed?
Oh my God. We've just had a... I'll tell you, I've been trying to sort out the Senate Bill 308 and have presented training on it and have been in long conversations with our solicitor's office about it. I would suggest to you that... All right, specifically as far as surrendering the weapon or showing a permit... I would suggest that it is good practice to go ahead and, if somebody wants to ask me about whether or not I'm armed, I'm going to tell them, hey, I'm a cop, and I'm happy to provide them with my ID. I would think that that would be the most rational decision in any case, even if it isn't required. We have this new Senate bill that came out has kind of changed. It's changed all our concealed weapons laws, and what the lawyers keep telling me is this going to get worked out in court. I don't really see how letting the officer or hold the weapon during the encounter would be a bad thing. Whether or not it's required, it would be very dependent on the facts. I don't think an officer securing a weapon during a stop, I think a court would be very reluctant to intervene in that unless the officer was doing just something crazy.
But by the same token, and Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not aware of any statute that says specifically if you're pulled over, you have to say, I've got a concealed weapon, here's my permit. I'm not aware of any statute in Georgia that says that.
Yeah, not in Georgia. I know Florida does.
In Alabama.
So
South Carolina.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and do it.
Well, yeah, there's no difference between a concealed weapon and an exposed weapon in the state anymore.
What if you're driving someone else's car that you know that their weapon is in their car? Don't be driving their car.
Yeah, you're actually...
You're putting yourself
in big risk, yeah. And that's one of the things with the new Senate bill, is they have... unless you're a prohibited person, you are allowed to carry a weapon in your car. You are allowed to carry a weapon in somebody else. Well, the way they wrote the law was kind of weird on that. If you're in somebody else's car, you have to be eligible for a permit and not be a prohibited person. So if you're in another person's car, you have issues. If you know the weapon's in there, you're on the hook for it. Because, I mean, if you're doing it in some way that's illegal, I mean, you have knowledge of that. Assuming that you're nice and talk to us about it.
It doesn't even matter if you didn't know it was there.
Then you're in a kind of a... Now, then you're going to have to... You're probably going to exert some sort of defense, like, we were out last night, I was drinking, I have a permit, went out to the bar when I started drinking, and put my gun under the seat so it's locked. But, so that
somebody who was driving your dad's car and his gun was in the trunk.
Yeah, I would go back to what you saw in this show. Never consent to a search because you got no idea what someone else has left in there. Even if you're as clean, if you've had the Pope driving in your car, Cheech and Chong, you don't know what's in there.
All right, next question.
It's going around by Mike. So.
With Georgia State now, they are sitting on top of overpasses and clocking and using other cars to pick you up. Is that within the speed? I mean, the one guy will sit on top of the bridge, clock you, and have two other state troopers come down and pick you up.
For a trooper, yeah. They can do that stuff all day long.
Okay, I don't know how you can, if there's a, because if you ask to see the radar gun, he does not have the radar gun to prove how fast you were going.
You have no right to look at the radar gun or the laser.
Well, when they pull you over, they can ask you, did you want to see it? And you can ask to see it, can you not?
Under the radar, in the radar statute, I don't know if, I don't think it's real, I'm not real sure about laser because I kind of got out of general law enforcement before they were common. But as far as the radar, they have to inform you that you have a right to have it checked. What that means is if you say, yes, I would like to have it checked, they can just radio back to the officer, or the officer will push the button that checks the radar, hit the tuning forks twice, or if it's a late, I don't even know how laser works. I mean, I know the principles, but I don't know how you test them. But I think that particular statute only applies to radar.
And Jason, correct me again if I'm wrong, but my understanding is you don't have a right to that. It's the cops covering themselves if you challenge it later on. I mean, you don't have a right to show it if for some reason they don't want to show it.
Last time I did it, the cop actually brought it over and just showed me the speed. He didn't show me tuning fork or anything else.
Well, that's something. If he could bring it to you, he was most likely using laser.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think they use a tuning fork.
Yeah, the other cops don't have to come down and show you?
No, they don't. But I'll tell you what, we had, I don't even know how the judge let this go on, but we had a long speeding case in state court one time. And afterwards, our state court judge said, look, we would have prevented this hour-long speeding trial if y'all had just, I mean, you had three cops out there, if you just taken the guy back to the car. But, you know, and that may be true, and it probably was true. So it's up to the officer.
It's not your right to see the radar detector, but the cops are making a mistake if they don't show it to you.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it makes it easier for you to challenge.
I have two questions.
And let me add one more thing. I'm sorry. One of the things about this is one of the things that you're doing is you're raising multiple levels of defense. Not all of them might work when you need them, but if one does, then you're in a much better position than if you never raised them in the first place. So don't expect all these necessarily work, but you're setting up a number of obstacles for conviction.
To follow up on that real quick, when I train people, I'm training them to do the exact same thing. I may have PC to go into your car, but I'm going to want consent also.
Yes.
So that if somebody comes back and says, well, your observations and mannerisms about whether or not somebody is under the influence of mannerism aren't acceptable to this court. But if I have consent and a bunch of other stuff like, you know, bloodshot eyes, rays, I can't remember all the DRE stuff, but, you know, if I have a bunch of symptoms, you know, my case, anyway, we can use cumulative of things to get evidence also.
So we get back to the buzz phrase. What is that?
I do not consent to any.
I actually have two questions, one of which is, with the current legislation in Arizona, does that change the way in which, at least in Arizona, you have to or don't have to identify yourself? And my second question is, the organization Flex Your Rights, do you all cover how to utilize your rights in circumstances of civil disobedience in addition to, like, if you're actually not breaking the law?
Flex Your Rights doesn't have that much on like GTA protests and so forth. A lot of these are pretty standard all over the place. But Flex Your Rights is an association in a lot of ways with the ACLU. They sometimes are funded by the Marijuana Policy Project and other groups. They do try and be more general interest with what they provide and more everyday issues. If you want more information on handling yourself during civil disobedience and the like, there are more specialized groups that go for that, and I would go with them first. And what was the first part of the question?
About the Arizona immigration law. I think that's... That's going to be another thing that's going to have to kind of go into the courts, because the way they phrase that as far as having any lawful contact, and of course that's all state law out there. My interest is purely academic, but the way they phrase is any lawful contact, and that could include a tier one voluntary police system contact. So we'll let them sort that out for the courts before we start deciding to use it in Georgia.
If you want to talk about Georgia ID very quickly, in Georgia you are required to positively identify yourself if requested by a cop. What that means is it hasn't been hashed out in the courts. Generally, I mean, show your ID if you got it. Doesn't mean you have to do more than say, I'm Andrew Greenberg. Courts haven't decided that yet.
Okay, I have a general question. I recently was, I was 18, and in Alabama, when you're 18, you're considered a minor still, pretty much in everything. The only thing you're not considered a minor in is getting married. And
tried. You still can be tried as an adult immediately at 18.
And being tried as an adult. And in Alabama, it's my understanding that when you're pulled over and you request to call your parents when you're under 19, you are legally allowed to call your parents. And I was actually forcibly ripped from my car and spent about an hour and a half on the side of the road being screamed at and yelled at by undercover cops who did not have badges, their cars are not marked, until I had to ask for their proof, and I had to all this, and they were told me, I was just like the whole thing. They grabbed me, shook me, threw me on the ground, whole nine yards. It was pretty bad. And this actually happened maybe a month after the guy who got killed by the three cops in Birmingham. They were Birmingham cops. So no, they are not racist. They're just mean.
They'll be so pleased that you're here to speak for them.
They're terrible people. No, some of them are fine. But my question is that, here's a perfect example. I actually refused to get out of the car. And they asked me to get out of the car to search the car, and I actually said that I wasn't comfortable with them searching my car because I had three other people in the car with me. And they did not give me a reason for pulling me over, nothing. I mean, they just ripped me out of the car. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But my question is this. I went and I asked if there was any legal action I could take against the seven policemen and one woman who stood around me and screamed profanity at me for an hour and 45 minutes and physically touched me and threw me around. And I was told pretty precisely that there was nothing I could do except take them to the formal court where I would lose and be pretty much made the laughingstock of my state. And is there anything I can do that is not within my state for that cop?
I think first you'd have to refer to the statutes of your state to make sure that everything that what you said actually applies.
No, I already have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then, secondarily, it's going to be a civil suit at this point.
Yeah.
And they're hard to press and win. Doesn't mean it's impossible. Just means you have to have a damn good fact pattern. Your burden of proof is a little different, and it's harder to press them against law enforcement agencies.
In Alabama, cops, this is what I was told after the incident. In Alabama, cops are required to have a video camera that records everything that happens in their car because they park behind you, and I had one in front of me, one behind me. And apparently, in this particular case, their video was turned off, which actually means that my ticket should have been voided, but they weren't because I was not aware of this until after I had already gone to court and paid for them, blah, blah, blah. So... So I pretty much feel like I was just like really duped, and there's nothing I can do because I have no proof except for three witnesses who were not cops.
And if you've already pled guilty, you have really very little recourse.
Yeah. That's, well, I don't want to like get my tickets back. I want to get that cop put in jail. I mean, you can't throw a little girl who's 18 years old against her car or down on the floor or grab her by her hair and rip her up. You know, you can't do that. That's illegal. And I want to see him taken. I don't want him on the roads anymore. Is there anything I can do?
If that's the issue, I mean, you have three ways you can play it. One, you can go to the agency and talk to either their supervisor or internal affairs. You can go to the you could conceivably go to the FBI Civil Rights Division. It's a possibility. They tend to look for very extreme circumstances.
Right.
And what you're describing, based on what you're saying, based on what they've talked to, or I've done some training on, which is very, very minimal, would be probably on the lower edge of what they might consider. But it's something you could call that the field office there. And then the third thing would be to talk to a private attorney in civil practice who can practice before the in federal court and see if they'll file a 1983 action.
Okay.
But you're going to need, but that's where your answer lies, somewhere in one of those three things.
I'll add to that. First of all, I'm very glad you came out here, and I'm very sorry that happened. That is some of the stuff that turns people off cops who do fill a role that we need in society. I very much want people to see in this movie that you don't have to consent to a search, but if a cop asks you out of the car, you do need to follow those kind of orders. I mean, the cops are pretty well protected in that issue. You do want to lock. You want to go to a lighted place first off.
Yeah, because
I don't know about Alabama what cops have to do to ID themselves, but in Georgia, if you're requested, aren't you supposed to show in that?
I've never seen a statute.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what our policy says about that. Generally, if you're trying to want to identify, well, I guess in your circumstance it's a little bit different than normal. Instead of asking for badge numbers, I'd ask for a card.
Yeah.
Almost everybody has one in their pocket. We carry it for giving out case numbers and stuff. It's the easiest way to do things. And in the agencies where I've worked, asking for a badge number is kind of a joke because I have no badge number.
No,
I haven't. But as far as identifying themselves as an officer, I don't know that there's anything. You would think it would be just good policy or good practice for them to show either an ID card or a badge. I want to, because if somebody does something to me, I want to be able to say, I clearly identify myself as a law enforcement officer. I was there either in uniform or with my badge of office. And generally, if I'm doing something in plain clothes, I'll have my ID card generally, well, because it's also my key to enter the building. Generally, I have it around my neck, so I'll just pull it out or I'll have it available. Or half the time, it's just hanging like this badge is here.
And I'm a big fan of filing that complaint with the agency itself, because enough of those do interfere with at least promotions. May not get them off the street, but they do stymie promotions. They do cause the officer their own internal problems, not nearly to the extent to what you had.
Is that the Center of Internal Affairs? Is that what you're talking about? Because when I went to them, they laughed in my face.
They still have to take a complaint from you.
Yeah, well, apparently they don't. Because they didn't.
Okay, Alabama definitely follows different rules than Georgia.
Yeah, that may be it. I mean, they haven't reformed pretty much anything in, 150 years.
Well, you're still... You got more chain gangs on the road than Georgia does, so... My experience when I've dealt with this and Georgia's reporter on legal affairs in the past was that they would take a complaint in any case and file it. Not do anything, but file. I'd hoped that the guy you got an advice for on this before was a lawyer.
It was the head of internal.
Oh, no. Did you see in there where he said cops can legally lie to you?
That's true.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you'd gotten advice on this from like a lawyer saying you'd be laughed at. No, go talk to a lawyer. I have no idea who the ACLU Associated Lawyers are in Birmingham. I would pretty much guarantee there are some. How long? But... But any advice on this, not from the Internal Affairs guys.
Okay.
I don't know. How long was this?
How long ago? Yeah.
I'm 20 now.
Statute statute on any criminal and civil stuff might be passed, but you can still file complaints if they're going to take it. I don't know what the... No, you don't. No, you don't. You want to see. You want to see. Yeah, yeah. Your best results come to Atlanta, but you want to see real laws upheld. You want to see police do their job. It's not about ruining.
For civil, I don't know the situation in Alabama, but for Georgia, it's 2 years. So you would need to act. Okay. Well then. Okay. Okay, Monday's a holiday, Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I was and the ACLU in Georgia will list the number of associated attorneys. I don't know if Birmingham does as well. I would call the associated. Don't call the ACLU directly because they farm it out. Call an associated attorney.
It's not about you. It's about the next person. That's
yes,
that's
exactly.
That's what I told him. I said I don't know. Yeah.
My question is, throughout the documentary, as well as what you've said several times, the police are legally allowed to lie to you in a great deal of situations, but at least at one point preceding interrogation, they are required to read you your rights. I guess my question is, where does that line lie?
Well, it's when they're, I mean, they have to read you some form of rights, but there's never a point where they can't be deceptive. You have, it's just a matter of, a lot of it kind of comes down to what are you going to get versus what credibility are you going to give up with the individual or the people that they're dealing with. And so that's kind of an officer's discretion. Now, you want to know how I read people their rights? Basically, hey, man, this is just like TV. Just have to read you this stuff, and then we can start talking.
Well, I guess more along the lines of what I'm saying is there anything to prevent them from simply lying to you about what your rights are?
If they don't read you your rights, don't expect to get off scot-free just because you didn't get your rights read to you.
I know, but if somebody is not informed about this sort of thing, you know, they say, oh, you don't have the right to not say anything. You must talk to us or we'll arrest you or something along those lines. And
okay, well, actually, let me, I didn't address this earlier. Like that first encounter, that was complete crap. That officer, as soon as he starts laying hands on people, that's really going to affect his ability to get consent. Now, I've seen situations where we've tased somebody, and then later, well, not me, but somebody else tased somebody, and later after we sorted out the person's issues, we actually got to a point where we got consent to go into this guy's apartment. No, I mean, there are situations that are that bizarre that we were that calmed down. Our philosophy on it was, even though we had consent, it appeared to be valid consent, you know, there's no way we can go to court with this. And we went and got a warrant for it. But the officer...
Are you looking for a timeline here? Like when?
Well, no. I'm just wondering where the line between them being able to lie to you and then having to inform you of at least some skeleton of your rights, where that lies.
That's just the point where they have to... The only place I think they're going to advise you your rights...
Phrase my question better, I think.
Can they misrepresent your rights when they, in any form, like before that? Can they tell you you have to answer this?
Yes, they can lie to you.
Okay,
they're
so
really
it is
only
your...
They're going to read you your Miranda rights right after you've been arrested.
Okay, so for clarification, you have to be aware of those personally and know that.
Exactly.
That's the question.
And assert them.
I think you'd be in a really squirrely situation if you were trying to do a waiver, a Fourth Amendment waiver, and you were lying to somebody about their rights. Because one of the things the court's going to take into consideration is if I do say, not only did this person consent, and this is how I got him to consent, I informed him of his rights. And folks, a lot of time we're going to get it, even if we do say, hey, man, you mind if I search your stuff? No, man, go ahead. Look, you don't have to let me do it. So, no, go ahead. I mean, seriously.
And then there are the 5 kilos of pot in the back. I mean, people are that stupid. Or that under stress, more importantly.
Right. Intimidated. Afraid.
So, and again, it's about building up barriers. Even if they've lied to you about your rights, that's a level of your defense later on. It's not your full defense.
My question is more general. I understand that law enforcement still has to take an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution of the United States. And my question is, do law enforcement really understand or they explain the Constitution? Because my understanding is, how do we go from peace officer to law enforcement when according to the Constitution, you have just the rights that are enumerated in the Constitution are not the only ones you have. And what's not enumerated is left to the people. So I guess what my question is if law enforcement or the police were acting in the capacity of a peace officer, why do they not behave like firemen and come only when we call them, when there's, you know, the victim of a crime? You know what I mean?
It's not particularly effective.
but not very particularly effective in...
I mean, your crime rate... Proactive law enforcement's something that's effective in actually reducing crime, reducing fear of crime, things like that.
Yeah, cops on the street is generally considered one of the most effective cops walking a beat on a regular basis.
Well, let me ask you this. For example, this is the way I understand the Constitution. A crime is when someone else's rights are violated.
Well, obviously that's not the case.
That's
not
what a crime
is. Well, and the Constitution has now been so liberally construed everywhere that what it was actually written to do and what has happened since then are now, you know, 20 miles apart.
So in essence, a police officer's oath to uphold and protect the Constitution is just... The
Constitution doesn't define a crime. That's up to state statute. It's what's in state statute. And I believe the majority of police officers honestly believe that the rules and regulations they've been given by their department help them uphold the Constitution and help them act in a manner that's condoned by the Constitution. Whether those rules and regulations do or not, that's what the courts then have to decide. I would say that the majority of police act in a good faith effort to do what they believe is condoned by the Constitution and the courts. And again, crime is not defined by the Constitution. It's a state rules and regs, and those often got to be challenged, like Arizona, on constitutional basis.
But understanding of that, you also need to know, with the exception of this gentleman and whichever others that there may be out there, the majority of law enforcement officers do not have a background in legal. They've been taught how to arrest people, and they know the criminal statutes.
Revenue agents.
So. I'm sorry?
Revenue agents.
What about them?
That's what you just defined?
No,
to make arrests.
Revs or... I think they all...
I suspect you're trying to say something different than what they're interpreting. But
What she was saying was that you guys aren't trained in the Constitution. You're trained how to make arrests.
We're trained... I don't even remember my basic law enforcement.
Like, for example, if I get a speeding ticket...
Right.
And I stand in front of the judge, okay? And the judge often, you know, you go in there, and often the judge is the one who decides what the sentence is and all that.
No, always.
Well, who does the judge represent? Who does he represent?
The state.
Okay, so there's a conflict of interest.
He's, I mean, they're like in this state, most of the judges you're going to be doing that are elected.
So the guy who is representing the state is deciding whether or not I'm guilty or not.
And the prosecutor represents the state. The judge is neutral.
Okay. All right.
Now, I don't believe the video really covered the situations on which a police officer could eject you from a private residence. Could that be explained a little? If there's any conditions at all?
Is there, on behalf of the homeowner? Or on...
Eject you or come in without a warrant?
Huh?
Like, eject you or come in without a warrant?
Well, instead of coming in, could they pull you out of the house somehow?
It'd be pretty rare where, you mean like at your home or somebody else's home or what?
Well, any private residence, let's just start with that.
I think only in situations where there's a DV situation, which would be domestic violence or a crime actually being
crime
committed.
Crime in progress.
Is the only time that they can pull you out of anyone's residence.
Yeah, or if we can go in with a warrant, like if I have a warrant for, or an arrest warrant, I can go into your home to search for you. But generally, you can't make... I mean, it's a kind of old common law thing, and there are several exceptions now in the state of Georgia where we can't just go into a house and make a misdemeanor arrest without... or a misdemeanor warrantless arrest without certain exceptions being met. The exceptions, I think what you're looking for are kind of rare and detailed, or like things that aren't going to come up very often.
Crime in progress is the main thing.
Yeah, like
imminent threat to an officer, I guess, would be another.
Yeah, so now if you're talking about when we can go into a house, it's fairly limited. We can go in, it's a little bit broader than what they're talking about, but we can go in like a public safety exception. You go up to a house, you hear somebody screaming inside, sounds like they want help, or you get a 911 call, they're requesting fire, you go in, you see blood inside or something like that. You know, you can force entry on that. That's not really it's not a Fourth Amendment search. It's, you're doing it because you're there, you're somebody who can do it. It's like our fire department keeps calling us to, well, back when I was with the police department, and they'd call us to make entry. Like, y'all have the tools. You have a much better legal situation than we do. But.
Well, thank you.
Hi. Real quick, I feel like we've gotten a little off track where it's on bashing cops as opposed to learning what we need to do when confronted with a police officer. I would just like to maybe go over those points. Maybe from each of your standpoints, say you're stopped in a car or stopped on the street, what should you do, what should you know?
It always turns into a bashing cop session.
That's not productive. We're here to learn.
No, it's not productive. And the best way to always remember this is you simply need to know your rights. Be assertive, not argumentative. You know, if you have broken the law but yet still have some way to perhaps assert your rights and not go outside, or you're not in opposition with what the police are asking you to do, then, you know, assert your rights. That's basically our entire point.
Let me go. There's actually another movie we show that kind of walks through how to handle it specifically step by step. The first thing, if you're pulled over, that they suggest, hands up on the wheel where they can be seen. If you've got drugs or guns out in plain sight, this is going to be another question. But considering you're just driving along normally, put your hands up in plain sight, cop walks up, window is rolled down no more than this much, and makes any attempt to say, I smelled something, that gave me probable cause. This gives you an added layer of defense. You say, how may I help you, officer? You are polite, you are courteous, you take the initiative, you let the cop just come up. You know why I pulled you over? So you'll admit to speeding right then and there. You don't admit to speeding, you don't admit to whatever. That's for a judge to decide, not for you to confess there on the side of the road. You comply with the officer's request. In other words, you don't go digging for your registration before he gets there, so he thinks you're going for a gun. You wait for the police officer to ask for your license and registration. You get it out, you show it. If he doesn't ask for license and registration, don't show it. At that point, 90% of the time, the cop's gonna maybe ask a few questions, but more likely go back to his or her car and write up the ticket and come back and give it to you. The other 10% of the time, if they ask you or command you to get out of the car, get out of the car. If they ask you, then you say why or whatever if you need to, but you then are making the assertions, I don't consent to any searches. If they're asking you questions, officer, I respectfully follow the Constitution. I have a right to remain silent. I believe I'll follow my Constitution. That's not how I'd phrase it, but
officer,
there's nothing here to say. And there's nothing here to say. Am I free to go? You assert your right to leave. If you're not being detained, you're trying to get the situation defined. Until the cop says you're being detained, you're saying, officer, am I being detained or am I afraid to leave? You do follow orders from the cops. Not doing so escalates it way too quickly to levels you don't want it to get to.
I'll also say, too, with home searches and stuff like that, it's probably not the best idea to go, do you have a warrant? Because they can get a warrant. It's probably a better idea to simply walk outside, if you're in a position to do so, shut the door behind you, and say, yes, I do mind if you come in. Is there anything else I can help you with? Is there any other reason you're here tonight?
Maybe not that confrontational.
Yeah, okay.
But,
I do mind. Assert your right. And if you just simply say that, you have asserted your right. And shutting the door behind you is always key. If you leave it open, and this applies also to a porch door, it needs to be a door that does not have windows and screens in it. It needs to be a full door.
And one thing the other movie shows also is to be careful if you're throwing a party or something. Cops will often come to a back door and hope that a guest will let them in instead of whoever's minding the door normally. So make sure that you do party with people who are intelligent enough not to immediately let a cop into the door and will come get you instead. So it's especially important for folks who throw fetish parties and the like. We've had some ridiculous examples from that. So What would you say from your point of view, Jason?
Basically, people lie, don't lie. You make the decision about what you will and won't consent to. Because, I mean, there are some things where there are some places I might talk to somebody, there are some places I might not. But, you know, I would probably almost always consent to a search of my person. I know what's on my person. And I'll tell you, you know, if we're in an encounter, I'll tell you what I have. Because on the other hand, I probably wouldn't consent to a search of my car because that's going to take a little bit. And I really don't want to spend that much time on the side of the road. I'm not getting anything for it. Do understand that officers are predators of predators. We are keyed to look for confrontation and we're keyed to dominate it. If I can avoid a confrontation, I want to. That's sort of my philosophy of policing. Anyway, but just
don't look them in the eye.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times the way you communicate with people, and cops are trained to communicate with people, but if you start getting into stuff that's going to be start triggering physiological responses in cops, you're going to, you know, fight or flight applies to everybody. I mean, that's back in the reptilian brain. You put them into that, and it's not, it's going to be much harder for them to overcoming that with training and experience.
Jason makes another very good point. Never lie to a cop. Just had the Illinois guy.
Yeah, Blago.
He's got a million indictments. What's he convicted of? Lying.
Martha Stewart.
Roger Clemens is now being tried, not for steroids, but for lying to Congress. You don't lie to them. That's an easy one for them to prove. You're giving them the trial at that point. So if you don't want to say something, assert your rights, your respect for the Constitution, your rights to remain silent. Again, it's not, I know my rights. Respectfully assert that you're asserting your rights and don't then give them up later.
My question is, if I have several people in my vehicle with me, say I've got four people in my car, and I'm asked to step out of my vehicle, and I do so, and the officer walks back over to the car and asks one of the passengers if they can search the car, is that legal? Would that be something they would do? And if they did, would that be legal?
The consent, let's see. So you're, if it's
my car, I own it. There are three other people in it.
I think, well, one thing, I don't know where everybody else is practicing law or from these videos or what their experience is. The motions to suppress in my county are not nearly as easy as they try to make it out to. I would think that the driver or the owner are the ones who really have consent to search, or the legal right to give consent to search a car. As far as passengers giving that right, I don't think that's going to fly in a motion to suppress hearing.
I mean, that's pretty much the same analog as the cop coming to the back door to try to get someone to let them in.
Well, see, if I were to get the
and I've
person...
I've seen that happen at parties, by the way.
Parties are...
They're progress.
You throw good parties, invite me.
Nah, parties are a Fourth Amendment nightmare. I mean, it's a place where, you know, nobody. I think people want something that cops have a hard time providing us. You know, we can't. You know, what are you going to do with a party? You got 40 people there, not all going to fit in the back seat.
The other thing,
it's a friggin' nightmare.
The other thing that the one thing I'll say is you want parties where you show this so that your guests know not to be stupid. One of the things that the other movie does show is the driver of the car saying, "Let me do all the talking." Pretty clear straight away.
Keep your mouth shut. You don't have to talk.
If you're driving, you're probably the sober one. I hope you're the sober one. So
that's not always been my experience.
Hey, you haven't driven me that much. So
the drunk driving with the sober girlfriend in the passenger seat. Oh my god! What are you thinking, dude?
Too much alpha male.
That is way too much alpha male. Okay. So I think we.
I'm gonna have to say we're gonna have to wrap up at this point.
I'll hang out there. I don't know if Jason will. If folks want to ask other questions in chat, I'm available for a bit more. But Alanka is a much better speaker than me, so you might very well want to come see her.
Thank you all very much. Spread the news. Flex the rights. It's on YouTube. Enjoy.
Daniel.